Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge, show number 74, November 24th, 2014. I am your host, Tom Riddell, and tonight Robin's taking a break, so it'll be me doing solo. Once again, I just want to tell you what we're all about. This is a show where, of course, we showcase new authors, and you can find us over at the Writer's Lounge blog over at tomriddell.com. That's TOMRIDDELL.com/blog. And once you get over there, you can read all the reviews of all the authors that I have interviewed. And you can go into the upper left-hand corner of the page and click on the Blog Talk Radio player and listen to the shows as you read the reviews. So that's a lot of fun. And I've gotten some feedback, and they really like doing that. So hopefully you'll take advantage of that. Also, of course, you can find us on Facebook. Just go to the Blog Talk Radio site. You'll find a link there. Click it and go to the Facebook site and please like us. And then, of course, we are also on Twitter. Go over there and follow us on Twitter. And you can contact us, of course, the old-fashioned way at twl11@yahoo.com. And upcoming guest authors on December 8th, a returning author from our last show a couple of weeks ago, Jim Allen will be on to talk about his book, Nothing Is As It Appears, It's All Smoke and Mirrors. And this time around, we're going to spend an entire hour talking about UFOs. So that should be a really interesting show. And right now, just to give you an idea, Jim's book is going viral. He has been on several shows. He's been on Caravan to Midnight he's been on. And that is getting all kinds of hits over there on the YouTube site. So kind of look that up if you could. His name again is Jim Allen, and his book is called Nothing Is As It Appears, It's All Smoke and Mirrors. Next time on the Writer's Lounge show in 2 weeks. And, of course, we have a sponsor here for our show. It is Magic Pen Web Design, and offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. So go over there to magicpenwebdesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. On tonight's show, of course, just a brief intro, we'll be bringing her on at quarter after the hour here. KJ Bagley will be on to talk to us about Hierophant's Bridge. And it's an interesting story about a girl, a teenager who goes to another fantasy world, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy that. So she's coming up here at quarter after the hour. So please set your clocks, people, and come on back at quarter after if you don't want to listen to me talk for the next 10 minutes. And actually, I'm not going to talk. What I'm going to do is turn the program over now to a gentleman by the name of author Philip Kerr. And he wrote a couple of books. One was Prayer, and the other one was A Man Without Debate, I think is the name of it. So he's going to talk here in the next 7 minutes about on-the-ground research for writers. So it's something that's very interesting to all of us who are out there trying to do research. And when we come back, we can talk to KJ Bailey. Excuse me, my throat's closing up. Not good for a radio personality such as myself. So anyway, you can give us a call here if you'd like once KJ gets on at toll-free 877-878-1436 and the regular number 626-213-5613. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Philip Kerr, and he'll talk to us about writing. We'll be back.
Usually, the travel that I undertake has more to do with what I'm writing, and consequently, I'm very much a writer who believes in, yes, doing the book research at home, but there's no substitute for actually tramping around streets and experiencing the city on foot. And I always say to anyone who's planning to write a book, walk the city. Never have a professional researcher, because they will always filter the information. And you have to encounter the experience, not just the facts, but the feeling as well. It's a bit Robert De Niro, this kind of, you know, method acting theory of how to write a book, but it does work. Because you get ideas and you get feelings and you get sensations, and they go in a book. And I'll give you a very good example. I had to write about a place called Wewelsburg, which is a little castle in northern Westphalia in Germany that Himmler had bought. And he bought this place because he was planning to make it the center of the new SS state of Burgundy. And this was going to be the spiritual headquarters of the SS, this little castle. And then he took a load of Soviet POWs, about 800 people, and worked them to death to build a crypt in this castle where, sort of along sort of Arthurian lines, where sort of SS generals, when they died, would eventually, their ashes would be interred. So, creepy concept. And I was planning to visit this place. I was in Amsterdam, and I rang up, and I said, "Have you got I forgot to mention it's now a youth hostel. Only the Germans could turn it. It's a youth hostel now." So I bought myself a little youth hosteling card, and I thought, well, that's all I need to get in this place. So I rang up, and I said, "Do you have a bed?" "No, we are completely full." So I thought, well, you know, I've got to go anyway, because regardless of whether they're full or not, even if I have to sleep in the car. So I drove all the way there to this place. It was about four hours. And when I got there, it was Halloween. It was a dark and stormy night. Wind lashed the flagpole and rattled the lanyard on the flag. And I knocked at the door. And it was huge, heavy. It was like Dracula's castle, honestly. And I opened the door, and this Igor figure was standing there. "Yes." I held up my youth hostel card. I said, "I'd like a bed for the night, please. Walk this way." It was like that scene in Young Frankenstein, you know, except I didn't say, "Well, I don't know if I can," you know. But I did indeed follow him down into the depths of this castle, and he walked me past one empty dormitory after another. The place was completely empty. And I got to the final dormitory, and he pointed to the bed nearest the corner and said, "This is your bed." And so, slightly unnerved, I thought, well, I better get some drink inside me pretty quickly if I'm going to stay here. So I said, is there a little hof in the vicinity where I could get some dinner?" "Yes, there's a little hof down the hill you could try there." So I walked down the esplanade, and there was indeed a little hof in this kind of Hansel and Gretel little village, which was full of little half-timbered houses. But the houses had creepy gold runes painted on them, like something from an M.R. James story, quite literally, which didn't sort of lend itself to me feeling comfortable there particularly. Anyway, I walked in the hof, and it was like the scene in Frankenstein, when everybody goes silent as you walk in the door and look at you. Well, I sat down, the waitress handed me a menu, and I ordered. And then I looked down at the side of my seat, and it was beautifully carved oak, And on the side was a skull and crossbones, a death's head. And then I thought, well, you know, it's nicely carved. Perhaps they just didn't want to vandalize it, you know. So if they'd been Greeks, of course, they would have done. And then I looked up at the ceiling, and it was the double lightning SS flash carved again beautifully on the ceiling. And so I had a very good dinner, and I went to the men's room, and I walked down this long corridor on these bits of brown paper sort of taped to the wall. And I thought, well, I've got to see behind one of these bits of brown paper. So I tugged one off, and they were all men in SS uniform. And they were all young men, and more disturbing yet, they were all recent photographs. And it was my little John Voight Odessa file moment, because I suddenly realized I was in what was probably the spot where fascists and Nazis continue to congregate in Germany, albeit a very small number of people, but nonetheless slightly disturbing. More disturbing was the discovery that I couldn't actually get the brown paper back on the over the picture, and I sort of get thinking, you know, well, you know, perhaps I ought to get out of here as soon as possible now. Well, I went back to the castle and endured a very uncomfortable night and got up early and had a good sneak around in the small hours. But that's the kind of thing you do in order to find truth, as it were, in order to sort of experience the stuff you've actually been writing about. And a lot of that went into the book. And I firmly believe this is the best way to do it. I mean, I do take it to sort of slightly absurd lengths. And I know it's absurd, but and if it makes me seem like a sort of geek, then so be it. What do I do to keep Bernie interesting? To me personally. Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. And, you know, I guess, really, I look for the story first that's going to be an interesting thing. Because without the story, I can't see him being interesting. So if I can find an interesting scenario for him in which to work, then that's where I get inspired. I couldn't just sort of, like, force myself to write another one just for the sake of it. I have to wait for the history to sort of lead me by the hand. I can't just, you know, impose my will, as it were, because I need something. I need, you know, a little bit of inspiration, really.
Okay, that was author Philip Kerr, and it was very interesting to hear him talk about doing research. Reminds me of my novel that I'm writing now. I've been writing for the last several years, and eventually one of these days I will get it completed. But it's really interesting for me in the last several days. I have an author coming up, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, Jim Allen, who has been talking a lot about UFOs. And I've gone in and to my Apple TV, and I've researched through Netflix and Hulu documentaries on UFOs, which has led me to other astronomical sites and other very interesting space sites, for instance, you know, about outer space and space travel. And my book centers around Mars. So I found myself watching all these documentaries and listening to the people speak on these documentaries and absorbing the information and taking notes. And a lot of the stuff that I will be using in my book when I get around to actually again sitting down and writing it. But I think it's important also to know, like he mentioned, that it's your work. That if you pay a researcher to go out there and do research for you, you're not always going to get it the way that you want it. For your book, for instance, it's you know how your characters work, the researcher may not. So there may be something out there that your character could use that your researcher doesn't know anything about. So like he says, do what you have to do, get out there, walk around, learn your surroundings, and I think you're going to have a better time of an experience of writing your stuff. So little advice from me, a little advice from him. course, he's an author. I am not, well, I am an author of a memoir, but I have not written a novel yet, completed a novel yet, and I hope to do that. So anyways, let's get on with the main topic for today, and it is Hierophant's Bridge. It was written by K.J. Bagley and published by Amazon Digital Services in 2014. You may purchase it, of course, on Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. What I had to say about the story is the story starts off with Kate Jordan dreaming of a beautiful gray crystal lake, but just as she is ready to step closer to her dream place, her high school track coach wakes her up from her daydream and impatiently prods her to the starting blocks. But as Kate starts her run, the lake is still etched in her mind, and she bumps into a classmate on the track and tumbles to the ground. Kate is made fun of and laughed at. As a target of bullies, Kate struggles along and is supported by a few close friends, including her friend Derek and, of course, her dad. Derek meets up with a confused and frustrated Kate and invites her along on a walk where she opens up about her day. Derek informs her that she has a lot more friends than she thinks and ushers her to a place that will change her life forever. Kate learns her life was not what it seemed, and soon she is in a world totally different than she grew up in. A world of fantasy opens up to her, filled with amazing creatures and places that are very real. Kate now has incredible powers, and now, along with her many friends, she must find a way to defeat the evil in this new world and to achieve her goal of finding and saving her mother, who she thought had died when she was 9. The author, K.J. Bagley, creates characters and places that are likable and fun to imagine. The story has a good sense of conflict all the way through, and the anticipation moves the reader along. There were a few places in the book, however, when I lost the flow of the story while trying to imagine the place, the plot, and the intentions of the character at the same time. Given all this, the writing and storytelling ability of the author is good and will only improve as she continues with her writing career. So with that, I'd like to welcome onto the program, onto the Writer's Lounge, K.J. Bagley. Hello there.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing great, doing great. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great. You're coming in very loud and clear. Where are you calling from tonight?
Well, I'm calling from South Carolina, and we have just been inundated with storms, and so my landline went out, so you are getting me from a cell phone in the middle of the country.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, you're coming in well. Usually we try to go with the landlines, but the cells usually work nowadays sometimes better than the landlines do. So anyway, I just want to welcome you to the Writer's Lounge, and normally I would have my co-host here, but she is not able to make it. Robin had a last-minute thing come up, so she won't be here with us tonight, but we will have questions for you. And once again, I invite anybody out there to give us a call. I'll give you the numbers again here. You can call us at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And I'm sure, do you go by KJ, or do you have a first name, or what would you prefer?
You can call me Christy.
Christy, okay, well, that's a nice name. So we'll go with Christy, and we'll call you that. Of course, on your covers of your books, it's KJ, but Christy works really well. Would you mind, Christy, could you read an excerpt from your book?
Oh, sure. I've actually chosen to read from Chapter 7, which is titled From Sweet Dreams to Nightmares, and it starts, I came back to my own vision and asked Kaylee if we could make large sweeps around the camp so that we could see where we were, and she agreed that would be a good idea. As we flew in large circles overhead, getting further away from the area, I was able to make out the tower, and even further out I saw the lake. I pointed toward it, and Kaylee headed out in that direction. As we approached the lake, Kaylee began to fly more slowly. What's the matter? She moaned a little. I don't feel so well. This area is weakening me, and I need to land. She made her way down to the shoreline that I'm now so familiar with. My mother's just across the water. I just know it. Are you sure we can't make it over? She shook her head and turned back to her human form. Something is wrong here, Kate. I can't put my finger on it, but I can just feel that we're not allowed to go there. I began to cry. This close, and we have to stop. Even if it's just a dream, I'd like to have seen my mom. Don't cry, Kate. Maybe Prowl can direct me on how to fly across. It's not your fault, Kaylee. I have not been able to make it over there in my own dreams. I have a feeling that this has nothing to do with your ability to fly. We'll talk to the others and see what can be done. Just above us, there was a screech, and the wind picked up. We both looked up, and the dragon that we had seen earlier was flying overhead. He did not seem to notice us, but I was terrified just the same. He was halfway across the water when he turned his head and spun around quickly and began to change course coming toward us. I'd let my guard down, and he sensed this. I quickly reestablished my protective barrier, and Kaylee and I stepped back into the tree line behind us. The ferocious creature landed in front of us with an impact and instantly changed into a hulking young man. He stood at the shoreline, smelling the air. His eyes were red in color and seemed to catch the moonlight so that it looked like they were glowing. His skin was covered in thick black markings, even his face. The markings were beautiful, like calligraphy, only the letters were nothing I had ever seen before, and they were made of scales. He looked very intense, and I was scared. Kaylee reached for my hand, and we stood in total silence. He looked directly at me, and I could have sworn he knew I was there, but he didn't approach. Instead, he spoke out loud. I heard your mind, weak one. You cannot stay hidden for long. You're right to be afraid. When you come, we'll be ready. The time has come for a shift in power. My father will not show mercy, witch. This last part was said with a sneer. Your mother is waiting for you. Remember my name. I am Stalix. With that, he laughed, and it sounded like breaking glass and grinding metal. I ducked my head, and in a flash, he was gone in the air again and heading to my mom. I cried even harder now. Kaylee held me as I sunk to the ground.
Very good. It's very intense feelings that you write regarding a child looking for a parent. And I think that's the key to the story, to bring the readers into the story, that makes a huge impact on the reader as they start to read the first couple of pages. But let's talk a little bit about you, Christy. Can you tell us, you know, about yourself and what influenced you to write this book and to be a writer?
Yeah, well, I've always loved to read, and I'm sure you hear that all the time. When I was really, really young, I discovered, you know, books like A Wrinkle in Time. The Grey King was actually the first one that got me. The Hobbit and the Chronicles of Narnia. And then when my children were young, we'd lay in bed at night, and I'd read for them, complete with character voices, because they loved that. I didn't really think about writing, though, until I'd gone through a really bad time in my life as an adult. And a friend mentioned that I should write a book, and I knew that she meant, you know, a book about the things that were going on in my life. But that was really depressing, and so in the middle of that, I started hitting the backspace key and started over, and this time Kate Jordan was born. So it was a big accident.
Wow. So in other words, you were really kind of focused at first, or at least your friend had tried to get you focused on writing more of a, like what I did, is basically a memoir. Then you decided to move into fiction. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. At the time, it was a little bit, it was too soon. You know, I think at some point in time later on down the road, I can go back and share those things, but I just wasn't in the right space. And this turned out to be really cathartic and very entertaining.
So when all those years ago, as you read those books, did you ever think that you could write a book as well as the ones that you read?
To be honest, it never even crossed my mind. I just really never gave it a second thought. I always thought I would just enjoy the worlds that other people created. And then the first time I did this, it really just lit a spark, and I have two more books that I'm working on right now, as a matter of fact.
Very good. Well,
so I'm loving it.
it's like eating peanuts. You just can't stop.
Exactly.
Yeah. Your target audience for this series, as we just talked about, is mostly in their teen years. Where do you look to find inspiration? And is it difficult to write a story from a teenager's perspective, especially, of course, today when I see teenagers usually, and I'm not familiar with them a lot because I don't see a lot of them, but when I see them, they got their heads buried in their cell phone. So I'm just wondering, Do you have research subjects, if I should call them that, to check on to try to get an idea of what's going on?
I do. I'm actually the mother of five wonderful adults. But at the time that I started writing this, they were a couple of them were still in that target age range, and four out of the five of them are girls. And the strong female lead is kind of what I was trying to go with because I know girls. So I kind of stuck with what I knew, and I tried to remember teenagers are really intelligent, and they can be fantastic people. They're also a very tough audience, and if you are bombing at something, they are brutally honest, and they're going to bring you around to it.
Right, right. So what is your, when you say target audience, give me the numbers that you're looking for here. Is it all of the teenage years or just a portion of the teenage years?
I'm thinking that this book could actually reach anyone from 12 to 25.
My
young adults that I know that are in their early 20s have really seemed to enjoy it. So, you know, there's still some hanging on there from that age group as well.
And you mentioned about possibly writing a memoir type book earlier, and then you switched into your fiction mode. And I'm wondering, mm-hmm. how much of Kate is you? Is there anything that you wrote into that character that ends up being Christy?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, Kate Jordan, the name itself is actually named after two of my daughters, Caitlin and Jordan.
Okay.
I did put quite a bit of myself in there. As a teenager, I had a lot of self-doubt, and I was very moody. I was not the easiest person to live with. You can ask anyone in the family, they'll tell you. but I also wanted to add, you know, Caitlin's strength, and Jordan, the youngest daughter, is just fearless. And so when I put all of those things together, I think Kate personifies what I would have loved to have been. So that kind of makes her her own creature because it is what I would have loved to have been, but certainly not who I was.
Okay. And what about your kids? How do they like the writer mom?
Oh, they're loving it. They just are so excited.
Have they read the book?
They have. And I actually have two grandchildren that have read the book as well.
Oh, very good. Very good. So mm-hmm. what kind of feedback do they give you? Do they give you any criticism or do they just say, okay, I like it because this is mom or this is grandma?
Well, Caitlin's feedback, that's the 22-year-old, was almost identical to your own. And that was prior to your review coming out.
Uh-huh.
So that tells me what, you know, there are areas that I really need to work on because she loved the story and she understood all the way through where it was coming from. But the feedback was still virtually on point with what you had to say as well.
Right. And I think the thing is, too, you took an undertaking here that I think most beginning writers wouldn't even tackle, and that's to try to describe another world. A lot of writers will start off in this world and then work their way to a fantasy world. But my hat goes off to you for taking that leap because I have talked to authors before regarding that same subject. And I was really interested knowing that this was your first book, how that would read. And I did, as I said, there's a few parts in your book where I kind of got lost a little bit. But you do get lost in a fantasy world, and it's really, really hard to write that. So if you could go back and rewrite it, do you think you would change a lot or just a little bit about your book? And by the way, I want to tell you that most of the book was very well done, and there's only a few places where I got tripped up a little bit. But would you change a lot in your book?
Well, I think what I'd like to do, if I had it to do over, is slow it down. When I was writing, you know, and you know this, when you start, there are some days you just get into this fever and you just go. And so these wonderful things that are going off of these images in your head, they're almost movie-like as they're coming out, you know, through your hands. And so my weak point was just knowing that everyone that picked this up was going to understand exactly what I was seeing in my head. And so now that I've got the feedback, I would like to have backed it up and slowed it down a bit, because even though I knew exactly what I meant, I want to make sure that you, that everyone that picks it up understands. So I don't know that I would change everything. I think I would just like to slow down some of that.
Right. And getting to the characters in the places in the process, a lot of writers have a certain process that they work through. They take notes. They have a timeline. They do a lot of stuff. And then there's other authors who will sit down and just let it roll like a movie through their head and write it down as it comes. What was your process when you wrote these, when you wrote this book in regards to the characters in the place?
Well, in the beginning, I didn't take notes because I never intended to publish it. It was more of a, it was for me. But I just thought it was going to be a hobby. And then about halfway through, I decided to start an outline and try to help keep my thoughts in my head straight. And now I have what I call the kind of sort of outline. And that goes off into who's related and what species they are and where they're from and, you know, how old they are. So I've got more of a handle on that. So with the second book, the follow-up to the first one, there is a much more detailed outline, and I'm actually going through and writing several rough drafts.
So I have
learned from this first time.
Yeah, we all do as we move along through our careers in writing. And there's a lot of authors have been on this program who have talked to me about their process, and I'm always interested to see. And sometimes it changes for them, and sometimes it stays the same. And I'm glad you're continuing. I think it's great. The one question I want to ask you that kind of popped into my head as I was reading the review here that I did of your book, but define hierophants. Am I even pronouncing it right?
You are. There are several different definitions, but the one that I'm going with here is the person, he's a leader that brings someone to knowledge.
Okay. Okay, and that sort of does explain the story and the bridge, of course. That's the bridge between our world and the world that Kate goes to, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's even bigger than that when it's all said and done.
Yeah. How long did it take you to write the book?
Well, it took me 3 years, but it was a very crazy 3 years, and so it was a start and stop. So I say, you know, now when I'm sitting down to 3 to 4 hours each time, and that's an average. But back then, because this was never supposed to go anywhere, I really kind of did it at my leisure, and that's why it was taking the 3 years.
Are you a full-time writer, or do you have another job?
Well, I was retired for 2 years, and I've recently taken another job.
Okay, I see. So you did have enough time to write, and that's another challenge that a lot of us writers have that have other jobs that we're committed to. Of course, everything else is happening in life, and you have to kind of make time. Were you really good at doing that with this book? Did you have any challenges in sitting down and saying, okay, I'm going to take 3 or 4 hours out of my day here and then do it? Or did you just do it as you felt, as you had the time to do it?
Well, the first 2 years were when all of the hard stuff was going on. So that's really a hard one to answer. But this last year, when I finished Kate Jordan, I was very disciplined about sitting down, and I would spend my 3 to 4 hours, and the phones would be off and the doors would be closed and the dogs just had to wake.
Okay.
And I made sure that I got my stuff done, and I was really on top of it at the end.
So you're a quiet writer. You're not one that likes to sit down with music.
Well, one of the projects I'm working on now is actually in the horror genre, and I do use music in that one, mostly old big band music, now that we're talking
okay.
about it.
Okay.
Yeah, so
well,
I can go either way with that.
I actually use music when I sit down and write, and I have to be in my office to write. I can't do it anywhere else. It's the place where I go. My little cave, my little man cave, where I have to sit down and go into the world that I've created, such as what you've done with your book. I'm also wondering, Christy, about Kate. You know, what is the one enduring quality about Kate that you would like readers to see so that they will continue reading the series? Is there anything that sticks out in your mind?
Kate, you know, for all of her strength and her powers, she's very human, and she'll have ups and downs, and as she gets older, some of those things are going to be a little darker for her. I want there to be this passion that outlines her strength, you know, something so absolutely kind about her that she's more than a warrior or a princess or a last hope. I want her to struggle, and in that struggle, still love deeply and with all of her heart. And I want that to be the takeaway. Even in our darkest moments, we have the capacity to choose to shine warm.
Yeah, and I think that's important, too. We're not just writing a story. We're writing a message to the readers who are reading it. In your case, it would be teenagers, and hopefully pass along little bits of wisdom that they can take from the story. And I think that's why they had, when I went to school, why they had reading classes where we would sit there all period long and read from books, which, by the way, I was scared to death to do. I was I had very bad case of stage fright, and I even do now, as a matter of fact. Being on radio is not so bad, but being up in front of people is really kind of difficult. And I was wondering how you would imagine yourself in a bookstore reading in front of a group of people like you're talking to me here on the radio. Would you ever consider that? Did you ever think about that ever happening? Or what's your thoughts about your future of being a writer?
Well, I haven't thought about it until very recently. And honestly, I do really well with eye contact. And so to be in a group of people and to be able to read and look out and get reactions and see, you know, where they're hanging on to that last word, and then be able to kind of feed that with the reading, I think I would really enjoy that. That's what I loved with the kids. And I think that if I could do that in a larger setting, that it would be wonderful.
And I think when you're actually looking at you're actually in front of your readers, you see them and they have a response when you're reading from your book. They'll laugh or they'll giggle, and you'll pick up on that, and you'll think, okay, that touched a nerve, and I can learn from that and put it into my next book. I think that's another thing that a lot of authors do when they go to these readings and they pick up from their audience, is all these little mannerisms that they hear out in the audience, and then of course the questions that are asked there live are important too. So I think that's a really interesting scenario to play out when you're sitting down to write a book. I haven't even gotten there because I don't think I would be able to do it. But I was wondering, Christy, about the publishing process. Of course, you sit down and you write this book, and you probably write a couple of drafts before you send it out to maybe get it edited or whatever. But how did this publishing process work for you? And any advice that you would like to share from that experience?
Yes. Well, self-publishing is really, you know, it's pretty simple through Amazon. It's all self-guided. But I do have some advice, things that I've learned the hard way here. If you have the money to spend, hire someone, you know, to help create your cover for you. And also hire a professional editor. That's been a tough one. I've sent it out, you know, to several people that I know. I didn't have the money to do that at the time, and that was great help. I'm not knocking that, but it would have been wonderful to have had someone that's objective and out there that does this for a living, you know, kind of shoot that back to me and say, hey, this is what needs to happen. And I really wish that if I could go back, I would have done it that way. And the other thing is internet presence, to establish that internet presence prior to the book release. That's a big one that I learned, too.
Absolutely. A lot of work goes into your book. I think probably more work goes into your book after you've written it than while you're writing it, because there's so much that you have to do to promote your book, unless you're one of the lucky ones to get a one of the big publishers, and that's not easy to do these days. So self-publishing is an area where you really have to go out and do a lot of book promotions yourself. And it sounds like you've done a pretty good job. You mentioned the book cover. That is important. I see it work in both ways. I've seen bad covers with good content, and I've seen good covers with bad content. But most of the time, when you have a good cover, it sells very well, especially if that first story, especially with you writing a series, is something that people want to read more of, and that cover means everything, because that's when you're going to make, that's when you're, well, you're not so much out there to make money, but we're out there to make an impression on our readers, and that's huge, I think. But what I was wondering myself is, when you were talking about book editors, give me ballpark of how much a person who writes, say, 100,000 words is going to spend on an editor.
Oh, you know, I can't remember the numbers now, but they go, excuse me, they'll either go by the page or by the word, and I know that I was looking at about a couple grand.
Okay.
To have someone do that and send it back to me, and we had just gone through a move, and I just did not have that kind of money.
Right. And that's not too bad. I think that that's reasonable from what I've heard around. I think $2,000 is pretty good. And, of course, you got to redo your research on the editors, too. You have to make sure that they're going to do a good job for you. And usually you go by word of mouth, or you have to do your research and find out more about them. So,
that's true.
There are some new authors out there, and I'm not sure if you're one of them, but they seem to want to glue themselves to the review pages at Amazon.com, and I've run into a lot of those. A friend of mine who I have on the show a lot in the beginning was doing an awful lot of that because he was nervous as a cat on a hot tin roof, jumping all around trying to figure out, you know, what the next review is going to be, how many stars he's going to get, what I was going to say about his book. How much of that do you do? Are you a star watcher on Amazon, or do you just sort of sit back and let it go as it's going to go?
Well, I really only looked for like the first week, and that was really, I was out of curiosity at that point. Since I'd never done anything like that before. And with this book, I really, you know what I'd love to see more so than the star watching? Now, don't get me wrong. I love the feedback because I'm all about constructive criticism. But I would love to see, you know, these teens out there cosplaying some of these characters and kind of taking off in that direction. So I don't know that I'm a star watcher as much as I would be. I would love to see these people at Comic-Cons, you know, dressing up as some of these creatures that have just come into my head and see how that plays out through them.
Uh-huh.
I think that would be absolutely fantastic, more so than even the stars.
Right. Yeah, it's tough sometimes. You get a bad review, did you get a couple of good reviews, and people seem to get stuck more on the bad reviews than they do the good reviews, and I try to tell them, look, you know, you're going to get bad reviews, let it sit. Don't worry about it. You actually want bad reviews, because if you're getting all 5-star reviews, then people are going to kind of look at the book and think, well, it's a first-time author. Who are these people? I would imagine they're probably your very close friends or your mom and dad that are going on there and giving you 5-star reviews. So when somebody writes a 2-star review or even a 1-star review, and then you have a couple of 5s, I think those 2 5s will carry you. It'll carry you along, and more people will pay attention to the 5 stars than the 1 or 2 stars. But it's those lower stars that help your book too, I think. So I've learned too, because I've gotten a bad review on my book, and the problem I had is that the person who reviewed my book never really read my book. The whole book. I mean, my book is like 700 pages long. So I could tell by the review that he didn't put the time in. He put the money in because he did purchase the book, which I was surprised. But, you know, he wasn't very kind, and he wasn't very, I don't know, he didn't have enough detail in his review for me to really think of him as being credible. And I would have listened to him if he had gone more into detail of why he gave it a one star instead of just giving it a one star review and saying this was terrible. So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that you're absolutely right. And I think also that when we put ourselves out there like we have, not everybody's going to like what you've got going on. You know, it's hit or miss. Somebody may get into this and think, this is not at all what I thought, and I'm certainly not going to spend any more time on it. And somebody else can pick it up and go, wow, this is exactly what I was looking for. And somewhere in the middle is where you're going to find your line.
And the key and the magic here comes with the writer who looks at those reviews and just turns them away and goes on and continues writing because that's what they love to do. And it sounds like that's what you're doing. So that's a very good thing.
Absolutely.
What's been your reaction to your book? You mentioned your kids, but what about the other adults in your family and friends? How do they react to your book?
Well, I'm sure you saw my 2 5-star reviews out there.
Okay. All right.
No, seriously. I've had really overwhelming support from them. They're a little biased, but I love them for it. Three of them actually cried when they made it to the end because they, of course, they know me and they know exactly what it meant for me to write that ending, which I have always phrased it as the ending of the the end of the beginning, because we're just getting into her story. But, you know, there were some tears and some people calling long distance and sniffling, and that's wonderful. That really made me feel fantastic that they knew what it took for me to get to the point where I ended the book where I did.
Right. And back to your writing, when you finished your book, your first draft is done, and you sit down and you go back, did you go back or did you turn it over to the editor?
Well, first I turned it over to my husband, and then I turned it over to my sister-in-law, and then I went back. And then I sent it off to Texas to several people that I know, and then I went back again.
Okay.
So I was pulling in. What's that?
Did you have to rewrite a lot of scenes, or how did that work after you got the book back?
Everybody basically marked it up and said, you know, hey, what's going on here? Can you make it a little more clear? And you know, this is kind of that sticking point because there's so much going on in the book that I would go back and sit down and reword it and then, you know, shoot that back and say, okay, is this a little more clear? How does that feel? And, you know, of course, everyone was helping me and they were trying to be honest and that's what I was asking for. So I would keep going back until I thought I had it to where they could understand and the writing was still kind of jiving with what I wanted to say.
Were these people that you were involved with, as far as, you know, your friends and your family, are they avid readers?
Yes. Yes. The ones that I asked to help are definitely avid readers.
Okay. So
I kind of had a deadline working, so.
Right. So you just didn't give it to anybody. You gave it to people who had actually read books a lot, which I think is smart, too, instead of just focusing on Uncle Harry, who loves you to death, and seeing what he has to say. So, I think that's a good thing to do, too. There's so much in the process that a lot of people don't even really think too much about when they complete their first draft. A lot of people will go back and they'll color it up. I find myself wanting to do that because I'm writing everything down in my first draft as it just flows out of my head. So I'm not really coloring it up until the second time around. Then I'll go back and say, okay, well, I got to use a little bit more description here, or I've got to, you know, add a few more details that would flavor the story up a little bit more than just letting it go bland as it comes out of my head. So, but sometimes when we're really into a story, especially with you and the fantasy world and all those characters that you created, I can see where, you know, those things look vivid to you in your mind and you write it all down. But did you have to go back and rework the characters? Did you want to, for instance, the one that you read at the beginning of the show, the creature with the scales, did you have to go back and redefine him so he looked a little bit different, or did you have it set in your head how he looked?
Well, I had him set in my head. I did have to rework him a little bit after talking it out. And the reason for that, without going into too much detail, because I think it would be a spoiler, but he, you know, there are some changes with that character, and I had to make him flexible and still somewhat terrifying. So in the beginning, I just had this one huge hulking beast, you know, that was going to be their nemesis, and it was going to be absolutely horrifying. And then his character developed. And as it did, I found myself changing him. So I did go back and rewrite and rework, and I finally got him to a point where I thought that he could serve the new role that I had cast him in.
Uh-huh. What do you do for fun besides writing?
Well, I like to cook and garden, and we camp a lot. Let's see. I like raising chickens. We have a ton of chickens. We have guineas and ducks and dogs and cats. And sometimes when the weather's good, we dance on the back porch.
Oh, cool. Do you live in a rural, obviously a rural area, right?
We do. We just purchased a 118-year-old house that's out in the middle of the country. So we've got a little acreage now. And we have been refurbishing the house. We just repainted the entire thing and put a new roof on it, and she is absolutely beautiful. And the scary book that I'm working on now is actually set in this beautiful 118-year-old house.
Wow. Does it have a wraparound porch? I'm imagining that.
It does, with columns. And
does it really?
Yes, it does. And the back side is completely screened in, and the front side is not.
Oh. Well, that's really cool, 118-year-old house. I'm a paranormal investigator and would love to go in there and see if there's any ghosts in your house. But that sounds great.
You would love this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I haven't felt anything since I've been here, but you would absolutely love this place.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like a nice place, and it's perfect for a writer like yourself. So you can probably sit out on your porch in a summer evening and sit down with your notepad or your computer and let your mind go to these fantastic places and characters that you're writing about. What's up for Kate in the next book?
Well, I'm going to be heading to the academy with her friends. That's kind of where we leave it in the first book, but it's real vague. They're not going to be there very long before they find themselves in the middle of a big old mess and they go back off world. Of course, there's a little time travel going on, so it's not going to hurt their academic career. Don't worry about that.
Uh-huh.
The new characters are going to be real interesting and lively, and the headmistress at the school is actually a surprise straight out of Arabian lore. So we've got Kate committing her first crime, although under the circumstances it's actually humorous, and I have chosen to forgive her for that. So
okay. Very good. Very good. What's we're coming up here now. We got a little more than 5 minutes left on the program. I was going to give the phone numbers out, but I don't think we're going to have time for that. But any passing thoughts that you'd like to leave us with on writing your life or anything about anything to do with what you're doing or where you're going?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having me tonight. I have had a wonderful time, and I really, really have appreciated the opportunity to be on, because it has really helped to stoke the fire to help me find that direction again and kind of get back in there and start, you know, letting that brain rattle around and see what's going on. That's all I have to leave you with for tonight.
Okay. Okay, and where can we find you on the internet, Christy?
You can find me as Author KJ Bagley on Facebook, or I'm on Twitter at K Bagley Writes. And I can also be emailed at j_Bagley@yahoo.com.
Very good. And thank you so much for being on the show. And I'd like to have you back when those other books come out. And I'm fairly certain, because I do have experience, I consider myself a professional here, but I do consider your book a book where it's going to get better as you go along, as I said in my review. And I do anticipate that you're going to have a really good, strong readership, too. So keep that in the back of your mind as you sit down and write, and we'll have you back on the Writer's Lounge. It's been a great time. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. It was wonderful.
Take care, Christy.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that ends another show, 74 of the Writer's Lounge show here on Blog Talk Radio. That was KJ Bagley, and hope you will go out there and buy her book, The Hierophant's Bridge. And I'm sure that, as I said, that we'll be hearing more from Christy, KJ Bagley. And next time around, which will be in 2 weeks, on December 8th, of course, I'm going to bring back Jim Allen. And we're going to be playing the show on UFOs. And that's going to be a very interesting show, I think, for everybody out there. I know a lot of people are really interested and intrigued by UFOs. And he has a lot to say on that subject and many more. And we had him on a couple of shows ago, and we couldn't stop talking. So all the subject matter in his book is really, really, really interesting. And again, it's all UFOs on December 8th. Until then, let the story begin. We'll see you next time on the Writer's Lounge.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. the storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in.